This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
This morning, rain falls on the Peace River Valley, home to a rich environment that has sustained the Indigenous people there for thousands of years. That rain falls on productive agricultural land that has the potential to feed 1 million people a year. If BC Hydro has its way, rain will no longer fall on the valley floor, but on the surface of an artificial reservoir created by damming the Peace River. The flooding would impact 57,000 acres of land. The Site C Dam is the most expensive and largest industrial project ever planned for BC. Experts say we don't need it. Landowners say we don't want it. And Indigenous peoples say they don't consent to it. Several court challenges have been put forward to both the provincial and federal governments by the Peace Valley Landowner Association and BC Treaty 8 First Nations. This weekend, thousands of people across the country are grabbing a paddle to oppose Site C. In Vancouver, you can join them on land or in water, carrying a paddle if you have one, to march along Kitts Beach and add your voices to opposition to the dam. I'm joined now by longtime Site C opponent and activist, Engineer Roger Bryanton. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning. That's quite an introduction.
It's a big issue and it's been around for a long time.
It has.
Now, the reasons to oppose Site C have been piling up, and I want to go through them with you one by one, but let's start with the big question. Is electricity from the proposed dam needed?
No, absolutely not. We have been very careful with the existing electricity use. The economy has been slowing down, and for the last 5 years, we've actually not had any new demand.
We hear over and over from BC Hydro that this is kind of a clean project. It's, you know, a great way to get electricity. You're an engineer in the area of clean energy. What's your assessment?
Well, I guess it's cleaner than some. It's probably cleaner than coal, and it's probably cleaner than natural gas. But if you have to flood a valley and destroy some of the best farmland in the province, they can even grow watermelons up there. We've only begun to tap into the potential up in the Peace. If that's what you call clean and it emits CO2 and methane from the reservoir, I don't know what dirty would be, but it's certainly not clean.
Now, we hear more and more challenges to the economic viability of Site C, including from Harry Swain, the former chair of the Joint Review Panel and former BC Deputy Minister of Industry. What do we know about that?
The costs are very high. They originally budgeted $5.7 billion, and it's now escalated to $8.8 billion. But that doesn't include the cost of getting it to the major population centers, which is probably another $2 billion. So we've just run some new numbers, and a few years ago, it looked like it was going to be around 8 cents a kilowatt hour. Most recently, April, the minister wrote an email to a colleague saying 6.4 cents. But by our calculation, this new electricity is actually going to come in at 14.5 cents, which is more than double what the minister said back in April. April 1st, which is, I think, a cruel April Fool's joke.
So now, the BC government, not surprisingly, as they say with a lot of industrial projects, is that the project will provide good jobs. What's your response there?
Well, I guess it does for a short while. It does create some jobs. But by their own numbers, we can look at conservation, just doing better, insulating houses, refitting windows, new systems for that. And they show 42,000 jobs, person years of jobs, whereas conservation would contribute and this is by their own numbers, 115,000, almost triple the number of jobs.
I think back to when I started working on this program, and I can actually remember interviewing Adrienne Peacock. She was very involved in the opposition to Site C, and you know, I thought Site C was dead, and I was like scratching my head when this project was resurfaced. I don't understand it. What's your reaction as somebody who's been an activist on this issue for decades?
Well, back in the early 1980s, it was opposed and stopped then, but it had the benefit of the BC Utilities Commission, and they're very good at asking questions. You know, they ask these same questions that you're asking, and they come up with the same answers. Now, I think what BC Hydro is seeing is a bit of pressure from the provincial government, and I'm not sure this is any longer a BC Hydro project. I think perhaps it's a provincial government project. And projects like this, I think probably there's an esteem factor to that rather than a need. And it's terribly unfortunate that they want to push something on the people when there is no need and there's such terrible impact.
Now, we've spoken here in the past with the folks from the West Moberly First Nations. What's at stake for them here?
Well, I would say thousands of years of their lifestyle living in harmony with the country. I think we could learn a lot from them. You know, they're losing a way of life. They don't have a 33-foot by 120-foot or 10-meter by 40-foot lot in the city and go to Safeway. They go out and they need their culture uses without any discernible impact for the most part. They use thousands of acres, and it's just a different way of thinking.
BC Hydro, as I mentioned, really likes to spin Site C as clean energy. Let's talk a little bit more about the environment and what's going to happen up there if they build this dam.
Well, you're quite right. There are a number of questions which were not adequately addressed. One is the cumulative impact. When you take a number of projects, we've got the Williston and the Peace Canyon Dam. There's all kinds of oil and gas development. And when they did the environmental assessment, they actually excluded some of the major industrial centers, pulp mills, sawmills, things like that, from the area that they were assessing, that they were trying to address what the impact would be. Well, if you rule out most of the industry and you're just starting from kind of the beginning, of course, your cumulative impact is going to be quite minimal or much less than it truly is. But we're looking at climate change from the reservoir. We're looking at things like change to the climate because you've got a massive lake there now, and you do get some lake effect from that. Mercury will be contaminating the water, and it's a cumulative heavy metal that each organism that consumes the next organism until it gets up to the final fish, and apparently the fish in the original reservoirs are no longer consumable, that they have so much mercury in them that they're actually toxic. We're going to lose thousands of acres of trees, and if we're worried about climate, we need to be sequestering the carbon dioxide, not cutting down the trees. We're going to lose farmland, and you know, the environmental impact is terrible.
And now I'm curious about the mercury, because we just spoke with Judy De Silva of Grassy Narrows in Ontario, who've been facing a terrible mercury issue for decades and decades and decades. How does mercury come into this scenario?
Well, in our case at Site C, what happens is there is a lot of mercury out in the overall environment, but it doesn't generally accumulate. It usually flows through. In this case, when it comes into the reservoir, it reacts with the plant life there. And very, very slowly, imperceptibly, it begins to get transferred from a fairly harmless to a methylated mercury, which then can accumulate through the algae and up the food chain with each succeeding level of consumption until you get to the fish at the top. And it accumulates over their lifespan. So it's a very good indicator as to how serious a problem it is.
Now, one of the things, you know, that we can really see the impact that could come from sites he is around food security and agriculture. And I've, you know, just read a bit like describing the valley and what's available there in terms of, you know, the potential resources for growing food for people. Tell us more about that and how that's going to be impacted.
Well, that's a really interesting aspect, because right now we're looking at importing about 2/3 of our vegetables, and they're coming from California and from Mexico. And our whole economy is predicated upon fossil fuels. So we haven't really developed that area to the extent that it could be, but there's thousands of acres of prime alluvial soil. And this is soil that has accumulated over thousands of years, and it's part of the natural cycle. The lower area tends to get flooded, and it gets a very fine silt. And it's, Wendy Holm is actually the specialist here and has been very outspoken about the same problem. It's basically perfect soil. It's like the Fraser Valley here. And the location of that is an east-west flowing river at that point. And so the sun comes very long during the summer hours. They're getting 14 to 16 hours of growing a day. And with these wonderful soils that are well-drained and highly nutritious, the plants just really grow quickly, and they're exceptionally remarkable for British Columbia. Most of us have no idea as to the possibility of growing up there.
Yeah, it's not something you first think of. Like, I think if you go, you know, and it's probably just my ignorance, like if you go north of Kamloops, then I don't think agriculture anymore.
No, we don't. And, you know, as the climate warms and the glaciers retreat and the rivers drop, those acres up there are going to be invaluable. We can't just flood them today for a few electrons that we don't need in the first place and destroy in perpetuity something which is, you know, is a blessing.
It seems like we have, like, the wrong paradigm when we say, oh, you know, you're going to create a dam in the north and you're going to create electricity, and it's just, the whole concept of it is so unsustainable. When you're taking away something as valuable as agricultural land, just seems like as humans we're not doing the calculations right in terms of how to live on a planet.
You're exactly right, we're not. And I think that's the big lesson that the First Nations people are trying to share with us, but unfortunately we're having to do it in the courtroom, not in roundtable discussions with their leadership. And it's a very risky project. I mean, they're focusing on interest rates now, and we look and see with these expenditures, supposedly we can borrow money for that at 3.5% interest, but it will take very little change in the economic situation for that to go to 4 or 4.5. And suddenly that $11 billion goes up to 13 or 14 or 15.
One of the biggest global issues right now, Roger, as we all know, maybe next to climate change, one of the biggest ones is the issue of water. Is that something we should be concerned about as it relates to Site C?
Yes, the water issue is highly important. The water quality up there, as they're building, is being damaged. You can see on some of the photographs and some of the videos coming out that the water turbidity, it's being stirred up as they're working in the water, and there's a high demand for water up there now with the fracking and some of the other development. But longer term, Wendy has a theory that this could be part of an overall plan under the North American Water Agreement that was first put forward in the 1950s to ship water east as their water supplies dry up into the U.S., and also to ship it south into California as their supplies dwindle.
I just want to get your thoughts, Roger, on the political urgency of this, because Site C's been going on. It just seems to, you know, the forces of industrializing it and putting in a dam there just seem to march on despite widespread opposition to this plan. What's the urgency? What and what can people do?
Well, there, it is very urgent. We're spending about $3 million a day up there for a project that we don't need, for a project that is extremely expensive, and for a project that we don't even have a market for. We can't sell the electricity to Alberta. They could buy it cheaper from Manitoba. We can't sell it to the U.S. It's not green electricity, so California doesn't want it. And we'd only get 3 cents, while it costs us somewhere more than 12 or 14 cents. So it is urgent. And I think the best thing they can do is to continue to keep pressure on their own MPs, their MLAs, in particular the fisheries minister in Ottawa is sitting waiting to sign some permits, but with enough opposition, if people can call Dominique LeBlanc and his office and tell them that they're opposed, if we can get enough pressure, then I think there's a good chance that they will be reviewed. And really, this needs to go back to the BC Utilities Commission and have a true justification put forward.
I know that there's people all over the country today that have taken up paddles to express their opposition with the whole grab a paddle movement. I have a friend who's up in the Peace paddling today. And there's going to be an event at Vanier Park as well. Tell us how people, what's going on there and how people can participate.
Well, they can come out and they can show their solidarity with the First Nations and with the landowners and the people up north that actually have these cases before the courts. They're also demonstrating that they care about the future and that they're not just happy going with whatever they're being told. So there are a number. There's one at Seashell, there's one at Saanich, there's one in Nelson, and for the Lower Mainland people, yes, at Vanier Park near Kitts Beach beside the Maritime Museum. People are welcome to join us. It looks like the rain is dissipating. There's some blue sky out there now, and we'd love to have more people. It looks like we might have several hundred at this point, both in the water with kayaks, canoes, and other small boats, as well as joining us on land for a walk along past Kitts Beach and back again.
Sounds like an event I hope people go to. And I do see that the weather is clearing up, so I think everybody should spring forth with their... do you have to have a paddle to go?
I think that's a great... No, you don't need a paddle to go. We just need the people to show up with the solidarity. Now, could I mention quickly a couple of other things?
Absolutely.
There is an organization that we're setting up. It's called BC Hydro Ratepayers Association. Right now it's on Facebook. And we're one person short of 1,100 members as of today. It's only been going about 3 weeks. There's a very good information source at stopsitec.org if people want more information.
Okay, that's fantastic. And I hope that momentarily you'll have your 11,000th member as a result of our conversation. 1,100, I mean. Anyway, it's been fantastic talking with you today, Roger. I really appreciate it. And looking forward to see a big group of people out there in Kitsilano.
Well, thank you very much for taking interest in this and bringing it to the forefront.
So I've been speaking with a longtime Sightsee opponent and activist, the engineer Roger Bryanton. And as he mentioned, in Vancouver, supporters will gather for a solidarity march, paddle, and community event as part of Grab a Paddle. So they will meet at Vanier Park at 12:30. Kayak boats and stand-up paddle boards should arrive at noon. And there will be a flotilla and a march if you want to be on foot and on land. And that will go to Kitts Beach.